You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 79 of the Geocaching Podcast, Caching for the Classroom. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Monty Ryder
and Daryl W4.
If you want to call in a voicemail during the week, you can give us a call. Our voicemail line is 206-350-3GPS. And we're also on Twitter if you want to follow us, and that's twitter.com/GCTpodcast. Unfortunately, last week, if you tried to join us live, we had to call off our attempt to record last week due to technical difficulties at TalkShoe. And it appears like we had the same issues tonight. Daryl and myself are not actually able to dial in. And so we're going to actually do the show tonight recorded, so no live audience tonight, but we'll try to tackle our show on night caching next week, and we'll give you some time to leave comments on our voicemail line on the subject if you won't be able to make it to us. So if you want to give us a call and leave a voicemail, 206-350-3GPS, we'd love to hear information about how what you do with night caching. So Montu, what have you been up since our last episode?
More like, what have I been down to? Had a very interesting time the past two weekends. The first weekend on Friday had an accident at work where the elevator I was in was stopped between the fourth and fifth floors, trapped me there for about 15, 20 minutes. When maintenance got there, they started to get the doors open, and just as they started to open, the elevator decided to drop from there all the way down to between the first and second floors. When they got there down to that floor to get me out, they had to drop a ladder in so I could get out. Saturday, our Pathfinder youth group held a fundraiser, movie and burger night, and they had a pretty good crowd show up. We wound up raising $1,100 that night. I was on the grill, and I wound up flipping 88 vegetarian burgers that night. My arm was tired after that. Sunday, my kids had a school makeup day. With us having the hurricanes, we have our makeup days for those instead of snow days. And so we got required, everybody, including the parents, to attend. And then Thursday of this last week, a group of people, myself not included, thankfully, got stuck in the same elevator that I got dropped in Friday for 2 hours before they were able to get them out. Finally, I got pulled into three meetings on Friday, and with different levels of management, all of them asking me to go over the story about the elevator. And then this last weekend, Saturday, did nothing. Sunday, we did a car wash fundraiser where we pulled in a little over $200. So, all in all, a very interesting and strange last couple of weeks. How about you, Daryl?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we did a night caching event at a local nature center, and that was a real blast. You know, this is a time of year that you want to get out and cache. Actually, now it might be getting a little bit too late, but it's the good temperatures. You know, it's not too hot, not too cold. You know, though now I think we're getting some snow, so maybe it is too cold. And it gets dark early enough so that you're not up until, you know, 10 or 11 just to leave, and then, you know, out until 1 or 2 in the morning. And then this last weekend, we recorded the next Cachers of the Roundtable. But last night, we lost power for about 17 hours, I think, in total, which was uncomfortable because, in part, it got pretty cold outside, and we had no heat at all and no gas or anything in the apartment. So it was not a comfortable night. Andy, how about you? I understand that you didn't have very good luck either.
Yeah, last night, yesterday, it was the first time we had... We have kept our furnace fairly low, and yesterday we were going to bump it up a few, and Julie, my wife, said, the furnace came on for about 30 seconds, and then went off, and then 30 seconds, and then went off. So I went out and pulled the cover on it, and our furnace wasn't firing up, so we had to have a furnace guy come out and look at it today. He went ahead and fixed it in about 30 minutes. However, you know, we didn't brave it out like you did. We actually went to our in-laws' house and slept the night there. That way, we didn't have to have the 57-degree temperature in here. So other than that, not a whole lot. I was talking to my son, Micah Boy, before before the podcast here, and I told him that I'd say hi to everybody for him because he, if he went to bed very nicely, and he did. So Michael Boy says hello to all of our geocaching podcast listeners. So with that, we've got a couple bits in the news this week. Smittyware released CacheMate 1.3.4 for the Pocket PC on Sunday. This release includes a handful of usability enhancements, a detailed list of which is in the changelog, and a bug fix or two. A workaround has been added due to the apparent inability of the Pocket IE6 engine to handle horizontally aligned hyperlinks, which must be manually enabled to do this on the device. And log timestamps in the exported GPX files are now expressed as GMT. A Windows smartphone version is the equivalent. Changes will be coming soon. And we'll include the link to that to the Pocket PC version of the CacheMates in our show notes, which can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. Also, a release for CacheMate 1.0.6 for Windows mobile smartphones. And the same thing, this does a bit of usability enhancements, and most of which share the same as the Pocket PC version, which are listed in detail in the changelog. A couple of bug fixes the same that have been implemented here, and we'll also link to that in our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info. Smittyware, which is the company that creates CacheMate, also announced the availability of their Colorado Notes Export 1.0.0 plugin this weekend. Plugins are now available for both Windows mobile versions of CacheMate, which export logs in the format used by Garmin's Colorado GPS receiver. The resulting file can be imported into GSAC, uploaded to geocaching.com, or used with any other software that can handle it. Again, we'll include that link into the plugin in our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info. Tonight on the Geocaching Podcast, we're going to talk about caching for the classroom. And tonight we're going to welcome Captain Math to our podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Captain Math.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Daryl, you've actually met Captain Math, so I'll let you introduce him a little bit more and how you know him.
All right. Well, we actually ran into him at GeoCoin Fest, and we're going to hopefully get him on Cachemaniac sometime in the near future. Kevin, why don't I have you talk a little bit more about yourself? We know that you're a math teacher, but how long have you been doing that, and what is your position exactly at the school?
Well, I've been teaching math now for 23 years, two different school districts in Pennsylvania, and I guess for the last 5 years, I've been department chair in our district, and geocaching has fit in real nicely with that. In that I've had a chance to start up a club in the school and find some interesting ways to use geocaching along with what I do in the classroom.
Well, what concepts is it that geocaching can teach related to math?
Most of the years I've been teaching, I've taught a lot of geometry. So geocaching has helped out tremendously with that, building up spatial reasoning with the kids. Specifically, one of the topics that we use, for instance, is the idea... It's not very intuitive to kids that the shortest distance from a point to a line is a perpendicular to that line. That important idea ends up coming up in a number of different theorems in geometry, but it's one thing to see it on paper. It's another thing to put it into play when you're actually getting out in the path. Now, of course, geocachers know that if they're walking on a path in the woods, they know that the best time to start the bushwhack is to get to the point when that arrow tells you that you're perpendicular to the cache, so that's when you make your cutoff. And of course, in my early years of geocaching, I didn't even bother to follow trails. I just took the straight line. But one of the things that we do with the students is we'll have the students work on computers in the computer lab, and they'll work with a piece of software that I've used for a long time called Geometer Sketchpad. That software lets the kids get very hands-on and experiment with moving a point up and down a line until they can minimize that distance. And even the honors students, it takes a little while for them to get to the point where that's intuitive to them, that shortest distance, the point at which you want to get off of that line is the point when you are perpendicular to, when the path to that point is perpendicular to the line that you're on.
Now, what exercises have you employed?
Well, as I said, we do a number of things with computer software, like Geometer Sketchpad. We've done things where students will take a map. In fact, actually, what I'll typically do is I'll take the map off of either geocaching's website or Google Earth or that sort of thing, where they can see where the different caches are, and then the students have to plan out what is the shortest path that starts from where we park our van, visits all the different caches, and gets back to the van. Now, that problem is actually a very famous problem in mathematics called the traveling salesman problem. But in our class, I like to call it the traveling geocachers problem. That's a problem that geocachers have to figure out all the time. The problem, of course, is that we have other issues to deal with. There's obstacles, and there may be roads or other things that, that put constraints on the way that we go. But it's really exciting to take a group of kids out after they've had a chance to plan this out on the computer and then get to actually walk out the path that they actually planned out to try and hit all those caches and get back to the van in time.
Now, how have the students actually responded to the different exercises?
Oh, very well. I mean, they get very excited about it. I've had a chance to use it with honors students, with middle-level students, and even with the special needs students. And those special needs students are sometimes the ones that benefit the most from it, because those students, for the most part, are kids that, they've had trouble with traditional styles of learning in the classroom. But when you give them something very hands-on where they can see right away how the math is applied right away, and they can see the consequences of making wrong decisions mathematically, then they are much more motivated to learn and to remember the math. When they get out into the field and go looking for the caches, one interesting thing is that they tend to find these caches faster than some of the other students. I'm all ready to tell them about what to do when they don't find the cache right away, and they usually find it very quickly. Their response to geocaching has been fantastic.
Now, obviously, you've put this all to use in your classroom, but I understand that you've also spoken at conferences about applying geocaching in mathematics. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. I'm a member of the National Council of Teachers of Math, and I've spoken at several conferences for them and some local and regional conferences in our area as well about using geocaching as a motivator and as kind of a context in which kids can learn math. And it's interesting that I've had quite a few people come out that have never done geocaching. Some will come out that have heard of it, but for the most part, there's a lot of interest when they come out. I get to talk to them a little bit about geocaching. I give them a little overview of what geocaching is. I talk to them a little bit about how it all works, and then if I have a long enough period of time devoted to it, I can take the group out, and we'll have planned out a certain spot nearby where there might be a couple of caches, or I might hide a couple of caches nearby just so that they can go out and try it out for themselves. There's a lot of interest from them in taking it back and using it in their own classroom.
Well, and I'm sure the hands-on with the teachers also helps to motivate them to use it themselves.
Absolutely.
Well, what about any suggestions for parents that might want to use geocaching with their children to kind of jumpstart some math skills?
Well, I get this all the time. The first thing that comes up is that it's another thing for the parents to buy for their kids. But, first and foremost, they may be looking for a unit to buy so they can run right out. But I guess the suggestion that I would make, depending on the area where you are, if you're in an area where there's already a well-formed geocaching group, I might recommend getting involved in going out to some of the events that you have in the area. In our area, for instance, we have a monthly meet, greet, and eat event, which is open to everyone. And this gives you a chance to come out, meet and talk to some geocachers over an informal dinner, and then go out afterwards. We always have a night cache trip afterwards. So we've had quite a few cases where parents and their kids have come out and had a chance to try out geocaching like that, and then their kids regularly come out on the trip. That way the parents know when they're putting their money into buying a unit, before they buy that unit, whether the kids are serious about wanting to be involved in it or whether it's just a kind of a curiosity from their point of view. So I would say before you start pumping money into it, I would say, you know, get involved, come out, and take advantage of the geocachers that are around you if you can.
Now, you also work with students outside the classroom on their geocaching. How does that club work?
Well, that club, we give the students a chance to sign up trip by trip that we would plan. I post them on a board in my classroom. Kids come down and they sign up. And, you know, some kids, well, they're serious enough that they want to come out in every trip that we offer. Some kids are a little bit more piecemeal. But what happens is that they get to come out and they get to visit some really interesting places, some that are, you know, over an hour, maybe 2 hours away at times. And they get to come out on their caching trips with us. The more different caches that they get to see, the more it makes them think about possibly hiding some interesting creative caches in their own area. And we have had a few of them, although not many of them, but a small percentage of them have started to hide caches as well because of, I'm sure, inspired by some of the really cool caches they've seen on the road.
Now, do you have any recommendations as to how the community, parents or otherwise, might help the schools to build geocaching into the curriculum or even as an extracurricular activity?
Well, I think the first thing is, if you're interested in geocaching yourself, I think one thing that would be really helpful, again, is to be aware of the events that local geocachers might be running. It's a great opportunity to network with people who already are involved in caching. There may be parents, you know, of people involved in the school. There may be teachers who are already involved in that. It's a great chance to get feedback and get involvement with people that are already well involved in it. And after all, I think a lot of the fun of geocaching isn't just doing it by yourself, but it's, you know, the social aspect of being able to go out and be able to work with somebody finding these things. So I would say first look to get involved and find out what geocaching opportunities there are in your area. Certainly go on the geocaching's website and look at what caches are in your area. You know, at least by networking a little bit with some of the already established caches there, you can find out maybe some of the really good caches to visit first. Maybe look for opportunities that you can kind of buddy up with somebody who has a unit before you go and buy, and that way you get a chance to kind of catch the caching fever before you actually go and buy your unit.
Yeah, very good ideas there. Now, I'm going to kind of catch you by surprise here with this one, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But we've talked about how math would apply geocaching as a teaching tool. Do you have any other examples you might be able to share of other subjects that might also use geocaching as an educational tool?
Well, actually, I think I do, because just what I do with my students is some of my students are challenged to write puzzle caches, even for temporary caches that we might set up. But some of those things that you set up, the links are just as interesting in history and literature. In fact, my own son has gotten very involved in hiding caches. In fact, I think he may have more hides than I do right now. And some of his have been puzzle caches that he's related to books that he's read. We've motivated him to do more reading. It used to be that he would never read a book, thanks to geocaching, we said that, you know, if you finish a book, for every book that you finish, you can hide a geocache. Well, he started creating caches named after the books that he read. And so he has a little mini series based on the Hardy Boys books. He's got a cache named after the Red Badge of Courage, the Stephen Crane book. Stephen Crane, the famous author who lived just 15 minutes down the road from us, so there's a really special spot apropos for that. So there are a lot of different ways to find maybe historical sites, all kinds of historical sites that you can learn about and motivate others to learn about by setting up a cache there.
Well, Kevin, I want to thank you for being on our show today. It was really interesting to get to hear how you're using caching in the classroom, and I really wish that caching was around when I was in high school so that I maybe could have had some awesome opportunities like that. I would encourage any teachers that are out there right now, if you have the opportunity to implement that in your classroom, do it. I think a lot more kids will take to it, and thanks again for being on our show.
And thanks for having me. Keep up the good work.
No problem. Join us next week as we will talk about caching at night, and hopefully TalkShoe will be behaving itself too, and we'll actually have another live show. We do this show each Tuesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service most times. You can call us live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525, or sign in to TalkShoe.com. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. You can call our voicemail line at 206-350-3GPS anytime and leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to get your feedback on the show. Thanks for joining us this week, and have a great week.